Have you ever thought about that while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb? I did. I actually bought two homes in Albuquerque that I Airbnb'd, and it was just an amazing investment, honestly, because, you know, as you are accruing value in your property, you are also making money on the Airbnbs. It's amazing. So your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
21 Seeds infused tequila is a must-have. It's an award-winning tequila. It's infused with real juice, with real fruit, which means the flavors are built in. It's real. So you need like two or three ingredients to make your perfect cocktail. Hey, you know how I'm always trying to keep my house parties exciting? New cocktails? Do you?
Yeah.
I feel like here's something that's going to flip the script.
Okay.
All right. 21 Seeds infused tequila.
Yeah. Tell me more about this, right? Oliver Hudson.
Yeah, 21 Seeds is an award-winning tequila that's infused with juice from real fruits. You only need two to three ingredients to make the perfect cocktail.
Wait a minute. I think I know what brand you're talking about. You know why?
Yeah.
Because 21 Seeds is founded by two sisters and their friend. It's female founded.
That's right.
See?
Sounds
See
like
how I know? Something I can get behind.
I know. Well, there's a good story behind that for sure. Listen, if you love tequila, you have to try 21 Seeds infused tequila. Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm Kate Hudson.
And my name is Oliver Hudson.
We wanted to do something that highlighted our relationship.
And what it's like to be siblings.
We are a sibling rivalry.
No, no.
Sibling rivalry.
Don't do that with your mouth.
Sibling rivalry.
That's good. Oliver, I am so excited about this next guest. I'm actually like, I have like a little bit of anxiety about the questions I'm going to ask.
I know.
Or what you're going to ask.
Well, I know. I want to ask this guest, here's a little hint of who we're talking to, about actually consuming human flesh.
Ugh,
I mean, and having to eat their friends in order to survive.
Right.
So that should give you a hint as to who we're talking to, if you have seen the older flick,
right?
Movie called Alive.
Called Alive. So we are interviewing Dr. Roberto Canessa, who still lives in Uruguay.
Yep.
And he is one of the survivors of the plane crash.
The one who ended up hiking out,
right,
with Nando,
right, with
his
Nando.
Boy.
Yeah.
And they trekked 43 miles. Not really knowing where they were going, sort of knowing that Chile was west, following the sun west.
Yeah.
100,000 steps.
I'm a little anxious to talk about, I don't know what to ask. I don't, you know, when you're in these situations, I feel a little bit of anxiety. I want to ask the right questions.
But you also don't want to offend or bring back any sort of haunting memory.
I don't know how he feels about these.
I know. I have a feeling he's going to be pretty cool.
So, but I can't wait to.
Yeah. Why don't we let him in?
This is also one of our favorite movies growing up.
Oh my God. But
yeah.
There's a new one on Netflix.
Society of the Snow.
Right. And that's what, so apparently.
It's amazing.
And it's done in the native languages.
Right.
And I'm excited to see it. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm going to watch it.
Me too. I'm going to watch it tonight. And let's bring on Dr. Roberto Canessa.
Open the door. Hello.
Hello.
Finally. I thought
I'm so sorry.
Roberto.
We are so excited to talk to you about your amazing story that we are very familiar with.
So long ago, I forgot about it.
No,
I know.
Not a possibility.
I'm a grandpa now.
Are you?
Where are you living?
I'm living in Uruguay, Montevideo, at the bottom of South America, there, between Brazil and Argentina.
Oh my! And so now, for those who don't know your story, I mean, I know it's a long one. It's an amazing book about an amazing film, Alive. But do you mind sharing a little bit about what happened in 1972?
Well, we were a rugby team, the Old Christians Club, and we were heading to Chile to play a friendship match. We are in the Atlantic coast, and we had to fly to the Pacific, so we had to fly it over the Andes, and the weather conditions were not appropriate, so it was very clouded, and so the plane decided to descend before it had crossed the Andes, and it crashed against the mountains. Human mistake.
It was pilot error.
Pilot error, yeah.
Stranded there for almost 10 weeks, over two months.
Right. 72 days, yeah, 72 days.
Faced with starvation, freezing temperatures, two avalanches that almost killed everyone, but it did take eight people, those avalanches, correct?
Correct.
And then at some point you had to make the decision, because your rescue was called off, to hike out and to find help. And you were one of those people who actually hiked out. Do I have that correct?
Yeah, there were many teams that tried to hike and they failed. This was October, which is winter in South America. So they were caught by thunderstorms and everything. So I thought that we had to wait. So the final expedition was December 11th. And then we were out the 22nd of December. Yeah. So, I think we were the poorest manifestation of human beings. I've been reading a very good book called Factfulness about how poor people can be. And then the first level is the humans that gather for eating, that it's, but they have water, they have to go 2 hours with a bucket to get water, but we wouldn't have any water. So we were the most poor manifestation of human beings.
So let's start from the beginning a little bit. I'd like to understand about your career for rugby. So when you were younger, I mean, was this something where this team and like being on this team was a huge deal, I would assume, for you? And to travel like that at that age?
Well, I was 19 years old, and in the previous year, I played for the national team, Uruguayan national team, which is not huge, I mean, rugby. But we played against the Chileans, and we were very even. The Argentinians used to beat us strongly, and Paraguay was very weak. So we became friends with the Chileans and say, why don't you come and with your team instead of coming with the national team so we don't have to wait for 2 years? So that was the way it began the project. And before we had a plane crash the previous year, we have done the same trip, and it was spectacular. I mean, the mountains were great, the weather was great. So the next year, we just were fascinated to go back there to play.
Was there a lot of camaraderie on the team? You know, did you guys know each other very, very well, and you were all best friends?
Well, they come from a school called the Irish Christian Brothers. The Irish Christian Brothers went to South America to teach religion and English. And it was a very incredible mixture between different cultures. I mean, we have lots of cow meat, lots of sunshine. And the Irish people, they have to eat potatoes all the time. And they were very poor, but very educated. So there was a different civilization, especially we came to sports. They say, you're not playing soccer because soccer is a game that doesn't educate people. You go to the soccer courts and they insult the referee, they insult the other people. You'll play rugby. There is a sport where the judge is always right. Brother, because they were Christian brothers, this is unfair because what happens if he makes a mistake? And then he told us, who told you life is fair? Life is unfair. So they will be good for teaching you. And after we finished the school, we decided to make our own rugby team. It was an amateur team. I mean,
And so here you are, you know, flying. And when did you know something was wrong? Was it clear? Like, and did it happen fast or did it feel like forever?
No. We had a couple of air bumps between the clouds and we begin fooling around. And then someone said, look at the mountains. They are very close to the wing. And in that moment, The engine went full power. The plane was shaking and trying to climb, and then it hit the mountain. And when it hit the mountain, I said, Roberto, you're going to die. I don't know what death is like, but this is the only thing you look forward is dying. What happens is the plane lost the tail and both wings, and the fuselage begin sliding on the side of the mountain. And I remember very vividly this moment because a guy was praying the Hail Mary. The other was saying, Jesus, Jesus, I don't want to die. And I grabbed to my seat with all my strength. And when the fuselage hit the bottom of the valley, all the seat got dislodged. I was thrown to the fore part of the plane with incredible force. I got a huge blow on my head. And as I was fainting, I felt it had stopped. And I say, I'm alive. My arms are here. My legs are there. I cannot believe I made it. I mean, this is a plane crash, of course, but if I must get out of the way because there were lots of dead people and injured people. And I, when I went to the back part of the plane where the door was at the tail, this all had been broken. And we're in the middle of the mountains, was snowing very peacefully around. No help, no nothing, no ambulances, and a mess with my friends injured, blown in the head, other word delirious. And a guy had an iron bar stuck into his stomach. The other one had a broken leg. So we had to put everything in place. Another guy coming towards the plane, and when he was like 10 meters apart, he was literally swallowed by the snow. So we thought, this is demential. This is crazy. This is not true. This is a nightmare. I must push a button and reverse what I'm going through. This cannot be real that we crashed against the mountain. I'm alive and all these people are dead. But that was a real thing. And someone said, the pilot is alive. He was the key man. The pilot knew about where we were. So we rushed into the cabin and the guy was bleeding and saying, we passed Curicó. And Curicó is in the middle of the Valley of Chile and we're in the middle of the mountains. So he was making a huge mistake. He was the key man, but he was the man that crashed the plane. So I learned further on in life that when you have an advisor, if he makes mistakes, you better change your advisor because that doesn't mean that he's the authority. And then the night came on and we had to get all together into the fuselage and people were crying, were dying, were different circumstances. And so when the next day came on, your mind gets resetted. Mm-hmm. And I was feeling very, very happy that the most injured people weren't suffering anymore and was not shouting. I think that the changes your mind can make, and what happened there is the society of the snow. We had to develop a different society from the everyday society because it was impossible to survive. And as everyone knows, the food was the dead people. So there were lots of changes that abruptly we had to assume in order to keep alive.
Did someone assume the role of the leader? Or like, how did that happen? How did the leaders emerge from a situation like this?
Well, our natural leader was the captain of the team. I mean, and we weren't towards him, but he was devastated. I mean, he was a rugby team leader. And of course, no one wants to be the leader when the Titanic is sinking. Mm-hmm. What happens in those moments that merges the leadership of ideas. The ideas that come up more strongly are the ones that go around. I believe that this is an experiment about human behavior and that we're like guinea pigs that were submitted to a terrible circumstances. And it's very interesting the leadership part that people theoretically can go on, but there wasn't time to leadership. And as you know, leadership changes according to circumstances. Mm-hmm. Winston Churchill was an incredible leader. He won the war, but he lost the presidency to England. So the leadership is a changing motion. And I think there's something that should be reviewed among how leadership goes around into groups, because the leadership was there, the leadership of ideas.
So it shifted. Yeah. As these 2 months progressed and you're trying to survive and you're using all of your capabilities as humans to sort of just stay breathing and stay alive, those roles shifted and changed, huh?
Yes, leadership changes according to demands and according to what is needed. Another very interesting aspect is that we came very close to God. I mean, we're rugby players, we enjoy dating girls and drinking beer and everything. And when you found yourself there and your friend that is the same as you is dead, and the line between life and death is very, very slim, you get towards your probable next boss, which is God. And you begin to think, hey, God, I'm going to meet you, where I'm going to go, where you're going to put me. And this is something I have found when you rugby at people in jail. People in jail come very devout and very Catholic. And this is a kind of human behavior. I mean, I think we are programmed in a way that in face of death, the religion comes and the need of God comes around. When we cannot cope with a situation is when God comes around and emerges as the force that would give you the chances that naturally you wouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the moment, what were the sort of most like critical decisions that had to be made? You know, were there sort of moments where it's like, well, we're either going to stay here, like, do you remember exactly the time when you're shifting all those ideas around with your teammates and survivors? Like, what were the most critical decisions?
Well, a couple of very clever and strong guys tried to get out, and they were caught by snowstorms, and they came back with their teeth. They were loose. They were freezing. They were blind. So it was very difficult to walk out, and especially the pilot said we passed Curicó, but the tallest mountains were towards Chile, and a friend of mine, Nando, had brought her mother and her sister, and that both us died at the plane crash. So he was committed that he wanted to go out, and he wanted me to go with him, but I wasn't very convinced. So other friends would come around and say, go and convince Roberto to walk with you. And he would come around and tell me, Fido says that I have to convince you. Is he coming? No, he wants me to convince you. So it's a kind of manipulation I felt that was going around. You know, these are the kind of human decisions that you must face. Until one day, a guy with his broken legs that was making waters, because we have water machines, there were the back parts of the seats that were in metal, and you put the snow and then drop by drop you would do the water. And the guy tells me, I look at you, Roberto, and I think that you must feel great. I feel as bad as you do. I say, no, I have my both legs broken and I'm a parasite, and really rely on people like you that would have the energy and the legs to get out of here. And in that moment, my mind completely switched. I came out from being there in the comfort zone, or whatever you want to mention it, as an heroic person that could save my friends. And I had the best legs for the team. And he said, look at the map. We are lost here. But to Chile, the most would be 70 kilometers. And 70 kilometers is 100,000 steps. We know that to the west is Chile and the sun sets to the west. So if you can walk out 100,000 steps, we will be saved. And that for me was like a key decision. Every step you're getting closer. I didn't want to die in the fuselage because it was full of the dead bodies and people were peeing there. It was completely depressive to die there. I wanted to die in the virgin snow. So that was the way my brain got programmed.
So you almost accepted your fate one way or another when you decided to take those 100,000 steps.
Of course, we were going to die. I've seen lots of people dying. So, and we were taking challenges and climbing mountains you cannot imagine. And when we were sliding on the other side, we slided for 200, 300 meters and the avalanches were around. And I thought, this is demential. I want to go home. But home was ahead. I couldn't go back. So there are lots of ways your mind gets programmed that were triggered at those mountains.
Presented by 21 Seeds.
Ollie.
Yeah, so you know, because you have a ton of friends and you throw a lot of parties.
Yeah.
You don't really. I mean, you've got your core group of friends.
I do throw a lot of
you
parties.
You do throw a lot of parties.
I love a party.
You need a signature cocktail that's ready to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's also actually nice to have a signature cocktail that's ready to go when you don't have a bartender. Mm-hmm. Or it's just nice to have something in your fridge when you get home from work and you just want a drink.
This is true.
But you know why I like this brand of tequila?
Let me guess. Can I guess?
Yes.
Female founded.
Yes. I love a female founded spirit because there aren't that many of us.
And 21 Seeds makes the most delicious and easiest margaritas ever. They're smooth. They're fresh. They taste amazing. And they're not too sweet.
No.
I do not like sweet.
They're not overly sweet.
Yeah. And they're infused with real juice.
Yes. I love women. I love supporting women. So.
Two sisters, one friend.
Listen, if you love tequila, add 21 Seeds infused tequila to your drink bar at home.
Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
It's a fun time of year because everybody's starting to gear up. You've got spring break happening soon. You've got summer happening soon. Everybody's thinking about their vacations. My number one source for where I might even go in the world, Airbnb. I've got spring break. I'm shooting. I only have 4 days. Where am I going to go? I go on Airbnb and that usually is like, oh, there's a good house. I love that. Let's stay there. If you are someone who travels a lot or even has an empty room in your house, consider hosting on Airbnb. It's a lot easier than you might think, and it's also a great way to make some extra income. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
This is kind of a funny question, but in the midst of all this, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks in, whenever, was there a moment when you looked around and thought, man, this is really beautiful here?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because as you know, when I was thinking that we couldn't be in the worst moments of our lives and that I was the most miserable person, an avalanche came into the plane. I was completely stuck into the snow and I was dying, and a person took me out of the avalanche, and we were 3 days there. And at the third day, we were able to come out, and it was a gorgeous day with the blue of the sky and the whiteness of the mountain. And I thought, this is spectacular. Who can help me to get out of here? Because the search had been called off. And then I thought, but this was made by God. It was made by the Creator. And I used to be a friend of God. So I will ask my friend to get out of here. So these are the kind of things that happens when you're completely broken and when you're completely, you don't have any faith in the future. But those kind of things that happen, I think that is a very good lesson for to know what to do when your plane crashes in life. Because people say they have problems. I don't think they have problems. They have obstacles in life. Problems are if they say you have leukemia and you will die in 2 months. These are real. They are problems, or problems are when you're stranded in the mountains and you see all your friends dying. And when someone dies, you're not sad for him. You're sad for you because you're the next guy on the queue. So there is a kind of redistribution of ideas that in the society of the snow that we made there were made. And this is something I think is worthy sharing. I think that the film portrays them in a magnificent way. It's a kind of film that you should go into there and let yourself go into the film and go with it. If you stay out of it, you will completely paralyze and see whom with the survivors would you think that you were. I think it's an incredible experience. And when the film finishes, you're completely in shock. People ask you, how was the film? And say, what happened? Where am I? Where am I? You know? And this, I think, is a very good job.
What an amazing feeling, though, that what such an incredible story was that you feel was represented so well. You know?
Did you write the book that the film was made from?
No, it was done by a friend of mine from the school, Pablo Bierzi.
Okay.
And then Amy, the Society of the Snow. And Bayona that did this film that he was a he did The Impossible. The Impossible is that film that a family was split in the tsunami in Thailand.
Yeah, Naomi Watts was in that. Yeah,
Naomi Watts.
Yeah,
and another amazing
film. Movie.
Yeah, yeah. Bayona Jota is an incredible film director. And when he was doing the movie, he was looking for tragedy films, and he saw The Society of the Snow, and he said, "I want to do this book." Mm. And in one of the chapters, I'm saying it was impossible to survive a plane crash. It was impossible to survive an avalanche. It was impossible to walk, trek out of the mountains. And that's the reason why he calls the film The Impossible. Mm-hmm. So I think there, and mm-hmm. it took him about 10 years. He had to do
How did you feel about the Americans playing the role? Did you care that it was in English, it was all American accented?
That was alive. The new film is completely in Spanish. It's spoken in Uruguayan Spanish, not even in Argentinian Spanish. Wow. So it's a kind of completely down-to-earth version, and he goes very in-deep into the personality of the different persons. I think that at the time that Frank Marshall and Kathy Kennedy did Alive was an incredible version of what happened in that mm-hmm. moment. But now this is a more in-depth version, and I'm very happy because there are lots of people around the world that are waiting for the story, because it's a story that is in the families. You know, your grandma knows about it, you heard about it, you saw the film, and I think it's a very good story for the kids. My grandson, 4 years old, comes around and tells me, "Hey, Grandpa, I want to climb mountains like you and save my friends." Uh-huh. And I think this is a good message of how to share things in life.
Oh, no, I know. My kids have seen the other movie, you know, years ago, Alive. You know, he's 16. I said, "We're interviewing Roberto," who was in the thing. He's like, "No way." I mean, he couldn't believe that I was even talking, going to be able to talk to you today. So he's seen that version as well. But I do love what you said, which is, it's relatable. It's not just a movie about sort of a plane crash and survival. It's finding, you know, the relatability within the characters. Who are you? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Which character are you? How would you have reacted in that situation? You know?
Yeah. And also, I also love what you're saying too, Roberto, about the sort of shift of ideas that what happens when you're in a situation like that is that everything you knew is changes, that you don't really understand it until you're sitting there and facing it. And if only we had the wherewithal to understand that moment, would we all be living very differently?
Yeah, exactly.
And
live your life as if you had just been in a plane crash.
Well, no, but just this, being
more grateful, being more realistic.
Yeah.
Living life. I mean, life is about 8 hours of sleep, 8 hours of work, real work, not to complain about your problems at work, and 8 hours about personal growth. I mean, your grandparents are going to die. Go and visit them. Your kids are going to be 5 years old only once. And then we realize we go chasing phantoms of life, and vanity plays a huge problem in yourself. And vanity is a form of being insecure. I mean, I believe that life is about sharing, is about helping someone. The other way, I was speaking with the prisoners on jail, and I asked him, "What is to be rich and to be poor?" And of course, they say, "To be rich is to have money." No, my friend, to be rich is to be able to help someone. And to be poor is needing help, needing someone to help you. So that's about it. It's lots more nicer to be helpful than to need help and to be around needing. And so I think we have to go on a different aspect of life and a different way of living. And we are going to be lots happier than we are nowadays, because we are always complaining. The more we have, the more sad we are. There's something wrong happening there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And do you think... So obviously this situation completely changed the trajectory of your life as far as how you think and feel about existing on this earth. But you were still so young, you know what I mean? You were 19 yet. You were just 19. So It's interesting.
Come on, I guess. When you were 19 years old, you felt that you were grown up. Seeing someone 19 years old being so young is a perspective of older people. So I think 19 years old is probably is what you're going to be for the rest of your life. So
that's true.
I guess reversing the question, instead of saying how did it change your life, who do you think you would have been if you hadn't been through this experience? You know? Do you ever think about that? Like, obviously it changed you. It shifted you. Who do you think you would have been a different human?
Obviously a less important person. Because I say something, people say, wow. When I say what everyone says, it's like, not something new. But something very important is that I came out of the Andes to live my life. I didn't come out of the Andes to be famous. I didn't come to the Andes to talk to the Hudson brothers 50 years later. I can
but Roberto, so I want to know what it felt like that moment when you saw civilization, when you realized that you actually reached safety. What was that like for you?
That's a very good question, Kate. And let me tell you, when I saw the shepherd, the society of the snow vanished in that moment, and I realized that I was back. And I look at my rugby socks, they were full of flesh and full of fat, and I thought, this is over. I must bury these parts of my friends because they are no longer food. They now belong to someone that should be buried. So this possibility of dominating your mind and re-switching your mind is something that we must learn a lot. And in every circumstance, how we should play the best role we should have. And this is something we are not doing. We are being pushed around by circumstances. And we are not guiding our lives. We are unruling our lives. Life is lots more fun than to be pushed around by drugs, by alcohol, by whatever.
So when you say your rugby socks, meaning you filled your socks with food, essentially.
Yeah. Our friends used to put into the rugby socks the flesh and the fat that when we're walking through the snow, they were kept frozen, but as soon as we crossed the line of life and death, that for me is when we found the grass, and I thought I was going to be alive, and I saw on the other side of the grass a lizard that was looking at me and saying, weren't you dead? Where are you guys from? Come on. And I thought we were coming from the ancient and most primitive aspect of life, of glaciers and snow and everything, and we're going back into the real world. And then slowly we found a horseshoe, we found cows, but the man was missing. Mm. And then when I saw the shepherd, I just said, we have done it, Nando. I won't walk anymore. I am into peace. And I had also a colossal diarrhea because I was chewing toothpaste that has magnesia milk. So, but I don't know at that moment if I was completely weakened or that I had reached my objective of seeing that great shepherd that helped us without knowing us.
Was there a letting go of sorts? I mean, was there just a release? You know, was there emotion or was it just, holy, we did it. We've accomplished our mission, so to speak.
Yes, I thought we accomplished our mission. And when I see the helicopters going for my friends there, and I believe that we came out walking on a very humble and fragile situation, and 10 years later, we are sending helicopters to rescue them. It's like a miracle. It's something that still puts tears into my eyes, that seeing how capable we are doing of great things in life and how a so low profile life we are living instead of that.
And do you know how far you actually had to walk? What did you say, 70 kilometers? Was that
70 kilometers. And of course, when we went to the top of the mountain and we thought there was going to be a way down, it was not that dark. It was very tortuous. We had to go southeast and southwest because when you make plans in life, most of the problems, they are not where you think they're going to be. They come up with you. So I think we should hack changes in life. People are not realistic on doing that. and try and not think about success and failure. You just try your way, and success or failure is going to come out later on.
Presented by 21 Seeds.
Ollie.
Yeah, so you know, because you have a ton of friends and you throw a lot of parties.
Yeah.
You don't really. I mean, you've got your core group of friends.
I do throw a lot of
you
parties.
You do throw a lot of parties.
I love a party.
You need a signature cocktail that's ready to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's also actually nice to have a signature cocktail that's ready to go when you don't have a bartender.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just nice to have something in your fridge when you get home from work and you just want to drink.
This is true.
But you know why I like this brand of tequila?
Let me guess. Can I guess?
Yes.
Female-founded.
Yes. I love a female-founded spirit because there aren't that many of us.
I know. And 21 Seeds makes the most delicious and easiest margaritas ever. They're smooth. They're fresh. They taste amazing. And they're not too sweet.
No.
I do not like sweet.
They're not overly sweet.
Yeah. And they're infused with real juice.
Yes. I love women. I love supporting women. So.
Two sisters, one friend.
Listen, if you love tequila, add 21 Seeds infused tequila to your drink bar at home.
Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
It's a fun time of year because everybody's starting to gear up. You've got spring break happening soon. You've got summer happening soon. Everybody's thinking about their vacations. My number one source for where I might even go in the world, Airbnb. I've got spring break. I'm shooting. I only have 4 days. Where am I going to go? I go on Airbnb, and that usually is like, oh, there's a good house. I love that. Let's stay there. If you are someone who travels a lot or even has an empty room in your house, consider hosting on Airbnb. It's a lot easier than you might think, and it's also a great way to make some extra income. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Because of this, did that make your sort of reintroduction after the 72 days actually more, I guess, easier or simple than complicated, just because you had sort of faced all of this? And or was there a transition back into the reality of
just life?
Well, when I was back, the club was devastated. We had to rebuild the club. I had to visit the parents of my friends that were into pieces. And I thought I was so lucky that I had all these chances of coming back, that I had a lot of homework to do. We bought some houses for people that had died in the plane crash, and the family was left behind. So I had the feeling of reconstruction. I felt that I had to go back and that I have achieved what I wanted. I mean, there was no time for psychologists or for thinking about it. I felt very happy at those moments. Mm-hmm. And I remember very vividly that they said that the team wouldn't go back to championship for 5 years. And at that year, we won the championship, and one of the parents that his son had died in the crash came around and hugged me and said, "My son has died, but you are here." Mm. And I found this gratefulness of the soul of this man that has lost his son, but he's happy that I am and I'm alive, and I was given life by the body of his son. That there are people that have a mental the dimension that are of greatness that we don't see them around, and then those are the people that make a better world for sure.
How soon after did you get on an airplane?
Well, we thought about coming back in train and not climbing on an airplane, but all the press was there and they were pushing us, and we had the problem about what we had eaten, and we had to tell them all together. And I wanted to go back and tell the people, the parents of my friends, what had happened. So they just put us on an airplane in Chile. And when I go into the airplane and I smell this, the plastic of the plane was the same smell, and say, wow, we are going to crash again. But I thought, Roberto, planes don't crash. So you have very slim chances of crashing twice. So we went back on that plane.
And then from then you were okay. I mean, you never had really much of a fear of flying after that.
No, really. I'm not going to fall twice for sure. Let me tell you.
It's so true. So going back to when you had to make the decision to sort of consume a friend and actually eat flesh, you know, who made that decision? Was it a collective decision? And, you know, what was the psychology behind that? Just pure survival?
As you begin to starve, your belt goes one hole every day. You have to build new holes, and you're shrinking, and there's nothing to eat. And then you begin chewing the belts and the shoes because they have leather. And then someone said, I'm thinking that we should eat the dead bodies. And someone said, that's crazy. We're not going to do that. We are not cannibals. We're not going to go that down. And in my mind, this is the good thing I was there, so I can tell you what happened. I don't know if it was good or bad, but I thought flesh proteins, fat, lipids, we need carbohydrates. But I had studied in biochemistry at the Krebs cycle that you can build glycogen or carbohydrates from protein. So the substrate was okay. So it was something we had to do, and I thought, if I had died, I would be very proud that my friends would use my body to survive. They would be part of that. I mean, it was 1970. There wasn't any kind of transplants or any kind of this kind of survival techniques. But it was quite very humiliating, but very simple. Mm-hmm.
Are you still in touch with how many survivors were there?
16.
How many people were on the aircraft?
45. 29 survived. 8 died in the avalanche, and 16 made it. We live in the same neighborhood. My sons go to the school with a sons of guys that had died in the mountains. We are a community. I think it's very helpful to be a community in order to overcome these kind of situations.
And do you connect with each other? Do you have like reunions? And
I was reading about that. It keeps growing and growing because there's grandkids, kids, and grandkids.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. The 22nd of December was the day we were out. And at the first celebration, we were 32, and now we are 180. And the families of the ones that came also are very close. And this film that was made on the point of view of one that the guys that had died has united all kind of differences between the ones that survived and the ones that died.
And what about your family? Like seeing your parents, when you came, what was that experience?
My father and the father of my girlfriend used to organize search and to go and look for us, and I told my girlfriend find someone else, but you cannot tell your mother find someone else because your mother is loving you all the time. So I was telling my mother, I'm alive, look for me, and she was saying, I feel him alive, I know that she will be back. And so my girlfriend would go and visit my mother, and she would go home and say, Roberto is alive. And the father would say, this girl is crazy. She's 19 years old. Her boyfriend has been stranded in the mountain for 2 months. It's impossible that he is alive. And one day my father-in-law had to wake her, and she was in bed and understand and felt someone crying and telling him, you are right. He's alive.
Oh,
I'm going to look for him tomorrow. And she was very happy to see his rugby player. When she came to me, I was into pieces. My mother said, you look like an old man. I had lost like 30 kilograms. My lips were bleeding. I was completely destroyed. And my mother grabbed my hand and say, I knew you were back. Everything is over. Mama, we had to eat the dead people. Who cares? You are okay. Yeah. I knew that you were coming back.
Wow. Are there moments that you look fondly upon this experience? You know what I mean? Like of camaraderie, of being together, of survival, now that you're through it.
No, of course. This is a story about friendship. It's a story about passion. It's a story about teamwork. Mm-hmm. It's a story about people's success. And it's a story that is worthy of being sharing. And that's the reason I think civilization nowadays that is so spoiled needs more stories. I mean, we are completely, the people that are going to look this program have in life more than what they need, and they do less what they can. If you have water to think, if you have a place to sleep, if you have something to eat, come on, guy, it's upon you. Don't wait for your airplane to crash to realize how good you were.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Thank you, Roberto.
Thank you
for coming on.
Thank you for telling the story.
So nice
really great to talk
you.
To you. Nice to meet you.
Bye-bye.
And hopefully we'll see you down the road.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm very fond of your films. I enjoy them very much. Keep on
Thank
going.
Thank you.
Okay,
Thank
bye-bye.
You very much.
All right. We'll see you soon. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
That's nutty.
Wow.
What a man. Like his perspective on everything.
I know, and I can't wait for everyone to hear this. And I know it's a story that a lot of people know because of the 93 film.
Right.
What we just learned is there's a new film, which you didn't know.
No, I didn't.
I knew it.
Yeah, sure. but I'm excited to watch it. I'm going to watch it tonight. Yeah,
I'm literally 100%. Watching
it tonight.
Because
I was fascinated with the film itself, like alive when it came out.
Well, and he was just so happy with this film because it sounds like it's very honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh my
I'm excited
God.
To watch it.
I think it's because we didn't realize that we're interviewing him because we were just so excited to interview.
Right, but
he's promoting this movie. I think that's what's happening. We had no idea.
Great. We're on top of our game. Anyway, it was incredible to talk to him regardless.
Oh,
and I'm glad
God.
We get to promote his show.
He had a great sense of humor. We got a Hudson Brothers hit out on that, meaning he must have known.
I guess so.
He must be our dad's age.
He reminded me of like Ellie.
Our therapist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost started to
totally cry.
Tell him my deep, dark secrets.
I'm like,
well, what should I do about anxiety? He's like, I don't know. Just get in the plane crash.
Oliver, if our listeners knew about Ellie, he's literally looks and kind of sounds
yes
just like
no I know
Roberto,
and he also has this swagger,
that same
like
feeling,
Roberto
the
has
vibe.
This, like, swag to him.
Yeah,
too.
I have
yeah.
the same thing. I found my face actually turning into what my face like kind of does when I'm when I'm in my therapy session.
I know, totally.
But he had such amazing wisdom.
Yes, he did.
You realize that so many people who have come in the face of death. He talks about finding God or the introduction to the relationship of God,
yes,
or to your spirituality or to what motivates you to survive.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. Very cool.
That is in those moments, like you asked such a good question, which I'm not going to ruin. But I loved that question that
this
you asked.
This is the outro, so you can say it.
Is this the outro?
Yeah, because you're speaking as if we've already talked to him.
Okay. So this outro I can say this. Okay. So no, but when you said, was there any moment where you looked and said, oh my God, it's so beautiful.
Right.
And he said, yes. I mean, what an amazing, I love.
Yeah. When he came out of the avalanche.
Yeah.
Snow, bang. And then it was beautiful blue sky.
And that's when God.
Yeah.
That's when he was like, I'm either going to.
Yeah.
Move and get out of this, or I'm going to stay here.
Die. And he's like, I'm not going to die with a bunch of rotting corpses, essentially.
Yeah.
He goes, I want to die in the fresh powder and the pow-pow.
I loved that. I hope everybody enjoyed that episode.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.